Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
So good morning, everybody, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm really excited today. I love to interview authors and speakers. It's always fun. You never know what you're going to get. Today I get a comedian. So this is going to be fun. Today I welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, Steve Rizzo. He is the author of Amazon's best-selling book, Get Your Shift Together. Steve is also known as the Attitude Adjuster and is a development expert whose clients include American Airlines, BP, JP Morgan, Chase, Scholastic, and Spring, among many others. And as a stand-up comic, he has headlined with many titans of comedy, including Jerry Seinfeld, Eddie Murphy, Drew Carey, and Ellen DeGeneres. Steve, it is a pleasure to have you here today. I'm excited.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I do appreciate it.
Well, I've been reading your book, and I've got to ask, your title, is that a play on words?
Actually, it came to me as I was writing it. I didn't have a title in mind, and I just noticed I started using the word shift a lot to shift your focus and shift your way of thinking, because the word change kind of scares a lot of people, and I wanted to use a more appropriate word. So when I was talking to a friend of mine and I explained to him what the book was about, I said, I guess what I'm asking people to do is to get their shift together, and bingo, I had the title of the book. So
right.
It was, just came right to me.
And that's kind of where I went with it until I got into some of the chapters, and I thought, well, maybe this was deliberate. That's why I needed to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just the book is about showing people how to shift their focus and their way of thinking to turn challenging times into opportunities. And I also show them, because I believe there are so many people out there where the American dream just seems to be eluding them, and you always have a tendency to focus on what you don't have, especially when times are tough. And I show people that they could actually shift their focus and focus on what's working in their lives rather than fixating what isn't working. And by doing that, you get your attitude becomes stronger, and you open up the waves for more and better things to come to you, because you start thinking of opportunities and other things that you can do to turn your life around.
Right. And I love that attitude, because the American dream, I grew up with the American dream, and I will never give up on it, but you're right. I see a lot of people just going, oh, man, this is too hard. But before we go too deep into the questions that I have, can you give our audience a little bit more information about who you are, how you got to what you're doing right now?
Oh, absolutely. I was a national headline comedian for 18 years, headlined every comedy club in the country, did a lot of TV stuff. And at the very pinnacle of my career, I left and decided to become a motivational speaker, personal development trainer. And there was a point in my comedy career where people who were opening up for me were Drew Carey and Dennis Miller and Rosie O'Donnell and such. And I noticed as time was going on, these people started skyrocketing to stardom, and I was wondering why opportunity wasn't knocking on my door. And I realized after I took a hard look at myself that opportunity was knocking. Excuse me. I was just afraid to open the door. And that's when I realized I had a fear of failure and success. So I decided to go on a self-help quest to better myself. And through the years of reading, I don't know how many self-help books and books about achieving goals and going to personal development seminars, something started clicking in me, and I had this inner voice started saying, this is what you should be doing. You can do this, and you have what most speakers don't have. You have the ability to command an audience through the power of laughter. So I started changing inwardly, and as a result, my perspective on life started changing, and ironically, that's when the comedy industry started getting really interested in me. And I was auditioning for a lot of TV stuff. And to make a very long story short, I just said, no, I don't want this anymore. And I left, and I followed my heart, and that's the best move I ever made. Now, when I speak to corporate America or give my personal private seminars, not only do I get the opportunity to make them laugh, which is all very gratifying, but now I become this spark that could ignite change in their lives.
And that has to have been a difficult decision for you to make, because you were doing what you knew to do, stand up and make people laugh and, you know, work in that community. And I love Dennis Miller, by the way.
It's great.
Love.
I know.
I try not to listen to him in the car. It's dangerous.
Yeah,
for the other drivers.
I know.
But you know, it must. How did you make that decision to leave? You know, what could have been a very profitable lifestyle for you.
You know, it was difficult. It was very difficult. This wasn't easy because I kept fighting it. You know, and that as I say in the book, I don't know if you got that part of the book. I talk about the big mouth inside your head. That's the voice that stifles your dreams and tells you you're not good enough or smart enough, and you shouldn't do this. It's too risky. It's not going to work. And this big mouth came back with a vengeance. And the voice was saying inside of me, I can't believe you're going to do this. You can't quit now after 17 years. Now the comedy industry is so interested in you, and you're telling them to go to hell. You can't do this now. What are you, crazy? You're just about to make it. This is what you wanted. Now you're going to do something else that you've never done before. You don't even know if you can do it. And I finally had to come to grips and talk back to the big mouth. And as a matter of fact, it was at a Tony Robbins seminar where it, you know how you have these epiphanies in life?
Yes.
You know, you're fighting with this voice for years. And then all of a sudden, something that Tony said that sparked something in me, and the audience laughed. And I realized, and I picked up the pen without realizing it, and like was almost unconsciously, and I wrote down, you could do this. And then I wrote down, you should do this. And then I wrote, you are going to do this. And I just threw the pen down, and right then and there, it was total clarity. Even though I had no idea, Denise, on how to do this, I knew that that's what I was going to do. I left the seminar, and 3 days after that, I had an audition for a TV pilot, and I came back to my apartment in L.A., and Drew Carey, who was my roommate at the time, said, how did your audition go? I said, it went great. And he's said, what do you want to do for dinner? I said, you do what you want. I'm going home. I'm not doing this anymore. And that was it. I called my wife and said, I'm coming home. She knew exactly what I was going through. And I just said a prayer and just asked for guidance and let me know that I'm doing the right thing. And all these serendipitous things started happening that made me realize it was the right thing.
They always do.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah. Once you come into focus, those things just pop up and you can't avoid them anymore.
Yep.
You can't have that mama talk in your head, you know, mama's voice. What the heck do you mean you're going to drop out of school? And why aren't you going to college? And you, that voice.
Yep.
It's really your voice, but it's in mama's voice, too.
Yeah, of course.
And once you kind of just, like you say, talk back, say, no. I only have the one life that I'm aware of, and I'm going to do it my way.
Exactly. But the key is you have to be aware of the voice. Most people just
right.
don't realize what's happening. And it's not a real voice. I mean, if it is a real voice, if you're hearing that, folks, that's you have a problem that I can't help. So,
are you sure?
That's a totally different thing. Yeah, are you sure?
We may need to talk.
That's funny.
I'll call you after the show.
That's funny. Hey, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be the funny one here, okay?
Oh, sorry. And the show is all about you, so
Yeah. What about my needs, all right?
I know. What's your wife's number? I need to talk with her, too.
Oh, God. No, please. I don't need that.
See, I knew I'd get the upper hand. I knew it.
Yeah, you did. You did.
Yeah, you're good.
So, yeah, but that's right. You have to, once you're aware that this voice is doing this to you, and you always know when it is when you're not feeling right, you have this ill feeling, this anxious, this anxiety, this like, you know, something's not right. And as soon as you become aware that you're not feeling right, you start noticing that there is something pulling you to do something you don't want to do. And that's when you can actually challenge this voice. And you don't have to do it with anger. You could just say, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I have no idea how to do this, but I know it's what I'm supposed to do, and I trust the process of life. it's going to lead me to the right people at the right time, and it did.
It always does.
Yeah.
That's been my experience through life. And you said something at the top of the show that really kind of caught my interest, you know, in that, and I'm trying to paraphrase now because I can't remember exactly what you said, but I went, ooh, ooh. You know, I think when you're doing things that you don't really like what you're doing, but it just seems the right way to go.
Yep.
You're not in any kind of flow, and I know that's a touchy-feely thing, but you're right. It doesn't feel right. You're always just that little bit anxious. You're that little bit, and just because of that, I think that feeling of, this isn't quite right for me, I think you do avoid opportunities to grow because you're
Absolutely.
Heading down the wrong highway.
Absolutely, and if you're smothered by the fear, anger, or any other negative emotion, mm-hmm. You can't see opportunity. Opportunity could be right in front of you, and it can have a real voice, and opportunity could be going, I'm right here.
Right.
But if you're
right.
smothered by all that negativity, you won't be able to unveil the opportunity because it's
you're
smothered
just not
by
ready.
All that stuff.
Right. Been there, done that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about. So, Steve, how long did once you left Hollywood and decided to do what it is that you're doing now so magnificently, how did you feel after that? How did your wife feel? I mean, it must have been a huge change for all of you.
I still had the fear.
Mm.
And there were moments when it was consuming me, even though I knew I was making stride and I was making connections, the fear was still there. And just for your listeners that are listening to this, fear that was created in you from when you were a child, you know, you could never get rid of it. It's always there. The key is that you have to know how to deal with it. So it's just quiet, and sometimes it'll be silent for a long time, but there are going to be points in your life where it's always going to come up again. But when mm-hmm. you have control and you know that it's there, it can't hurt you at all, and as long as you know that. So it always popped up. There was a book that was out a long time ago. It was Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And as you're making steps to get what it is that you want, and as soon as you just making the first, the second, the third step, one step at a time, fear dissipates. It doesn't come back. And
right.
There'll be another point where it will, but, you know, for that day it won't.
So you put an action to that fear.
Absolutely.
And then dissipate the fear.
Yep.
Because you just figured out that if I take this step, I'm really not going to fall over that cliff. I'm going to be okay.
Yeah, and I have
that imaginary cliff.
I agree with you. Imaginary
yeah.
cliff, yeah, imaginary.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to my fears. I talk back to it.
Oh,
and,
you too. I'm argumentative as all get out.
Yeah, I just tell fear, like, you know, hey, you know, this is my car. I'm driving. You know, get your butt
mm-hmm.
out. You know, you're not a passenger in this car today, or wherever
right.
it is that I am. And people look at me like I'm crazy, but you know, I don't really care about that anyway. So
when you're from Hollywood,
that's what I'm saying.
Really, I mean, it's, and I don't mean that in any way derogatory. You're from Hollywood. You guys do things differently than, well, you do it out in public. We all do the same thing. You guys just do it out in public.
Yeah, but originally I'm from Brooklyn, New York, so.
I figured with that accent. You
Hollywood was just my place where when I did stand-up, and I was there
right.
maybe 4 or 5 months out of the year to audition for TV and movie stuff, but,
yeah.
You know, I always carried my Brooklyn attitude with me, and when you have that kind of an attitude, you know, fear really doesn't have a chance.
Gotcha. Well, why did you write Get Your Shift Together? I mean, what impelled you to write the book? And well, give me a couple of timelines, if you don't mind. You left Hollywood. You went into your new business, which you're doing very well at, speaking, and you know, all the engagements and the motivational type of work that you do. When did you write the book? Before, after, during?
It was a while after.
Okay.
And I started speaking to corporate America, and I realized the tools that I give corporate America to turn their lives around
mm-hmm.
Were the very tools that I used to turn my life around when I went on that self-help quest, and I felt it was about time that I wrote about these tools and how they can help anyone with any challenge in life to turn their life around and to look at it from a healthier perspective. And some of the lessons that I learned making this transition, that life is supposed to be filled with challenges. life is not always going to be easy, and it's what you do with the tough times that makes the difference. It's not the situation, it's not the circumstance, it's not the event that takes place in our lives that will determine how successful or how happy we're going to be. It's how we think about these things. It's the thoughts that we have about the challenge that formulates the belief that we have about the challenge that will create the attitude and the way you feel about the challenge that makes a difference. And if you could change your way of thinking, if you can shift your way of thinking and shift your focus, you can literally rewrite the story of your life.
See, I think that's brilliant because I've been aware of that for a very long time. My grandmother, my very wise grandmother, when we were children would say, you know, there are two things that are true in life and you can never argue with it. One is you are what you eat and you are what you think.
Yeah.
And I believed her.
Yep. Yep.
And she was right.
And you're right. You are what you think. And if you know, haven't you noticed that there are people who are always talking about how sick they are? They're always sick.
Mm-hmm.
People who
they're
are
always
thinking,
miserable.
Oh,
right.
Man, people who are always thinking that they'll never have enough money, never have enough money. People who are always thinking about success are always successful. And a lot of people don't realize, you know, there are people right now listening that have beliefs. You have beliefs. I have beliefs. But people don't realize where their beliefs come from. They just know they have them, you know, and your beliefs just don't pop up into your head and say, well, I have a belief. The beliefs you have about anything in your life are formulated over a period of time through a consistent way of thinking. So the more you think about something on a consistent basis, whether it's positive or negative, you will be reinforcing or creating a negative belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a major key to success and happiness on any level, in business or in life. And a lot of people just don't realize that. They don't realize how powerful their thoughts are. And those beliefs that those thoughts create, they really do write the story of your life.
And see, I don't understand how people can't realize how powerful your thoughts are, because what are you doing with every breath you take? You're thinking. And you're thinking of many different things at the same moment. I mean, I don't know of a single person who can have a single thought.
Yep.
I've never met one.
No.
You know, we're all thinking myriad thoughts all at the same time. To me, that tells you that you ought to be very aware that you're a thinking human being and you ought to be challenging your own thinking on a regular basis.
And that's so true, but you just hit a point. And the reason why people don't know about it, because no one told them. People never told them. They're going through their whole lives
so
unconsciously.
It's not instinct?
No, it's not. You have to be told. I mean, if you don't know what your thoughts are doing to you, people just get in moods all the time. Let's say someone out there now that's listening is trying to achieve a goal. Okay, They get all the information they want, everything. They go to the right people. They have everything in place. They put money into it, and they're ready to go full speed ahead. Then somewhere along the way, they hit a hurdle. Then another one. Then all of a sudden, and they don't realize they're doing this. Unconsciously, these thoughts are going through their head. I knew this was going to happen. Why did I spend this much money? Every time I try to do something, it never works. Look at this. This person can do it. This person can do it. I'm just not good enough. I'm just not smart enough. Mm. Every time I try to do this, this stuff happens. I should have played it safe. You know what? Forget. How far do you think you're going to get? But they don't know. But if they were to become aware at that moment that all of a sudden, Whoa, I am not feeling right here. What's going on here? Why am I doing this to myself? Then you can stop and say, okay, I'm feeling this way because I'm thinking a certain way. Your thoughts create your feelings. Then you can backtrack, and it's that awareness that sets you free. It's the awareness that says, you don't have to do this to yourself. You hit a hurdle. Everyone hits hurdles.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you can methodically shift your way of thinking, and you can start saying, what do I have to do to turn this around? Okay, this didn't work, and that didn't work, and neither did this. Who can I go to that can help me? What needs to be done for me to make this better? Instead of saying, I'm going to give up, I'm not good enough, and I'm not smart enough. By constantly thinking those thoughts, you're reinforcing this negative belief system that you probably already had, and you're not leaving yourself any kind of a chance to turn it around. That's why the book is called Get Your Shift Together. You have to be able to shift your way of thinking and to shift your focus on what's working rather than fixating on what isn't working. And that's how you turn things around. That's the key from people who are incredibly successful and from other people who might have all the talent in the world but will never get to where they want to go in life. It's because of what they're saying to themselves and thinking to themselves.
And that is absolutely true. I mean, look, I hit hurdles all day long. I'm a web developer. You know, I'm a nerd. Let's just face it, I am what I am. I'm a nerd. And I love what I do, but I am in front of monitors all day. And my brain shuts down. I've trained myself. I've noticed that during the course of the day, I can only work hard, fast, and furious for about 20 minutes at a time. And then I realize I'm glazed over, my brain is tired, my back is going, would you get up and move? So I have trained myself once I noticed that, because I would catch myself doing the same thing. It's like, geez, I can't figure this out. I have a computer science degree. What the heck is wrong with me? And I was beating myself up. Then I decided, well, you're glazed over. So now I work in 20-minute increments, and I work very at a high, high level. But then I get up and I get on my little rebounder, or I go outside with my dog, Abby Rose, and toss, you know, stuff for her to try to fetch back. She doesn't. We're working on that.
That's great.
But, you know, I may go do a load of dishes. I may just walk outside and, you know, prune something or dig a hole. But I know that I have to do that. Otherwise, I get mentally in that same place, like, oh, why isn't this working? Then I get aggravated. Then it gets worse.
Wow.
So I've trained myself just not to fall into that trap.
Yeah, but you just hit the key. This is the perfect example for everyone listening. It's a perfect example. You said the key word. You noticed, which is the same thing as becoming aware. It's the same thing. And unless you notice what's happening to you, but believe this, Denise, this is the problem. People don't know. They just go on in this negative rage their entire lives. It's the noticing. It's the awareness, as I said before, that sets you free. Because once you notice it, then you could say, why am I doing this to myself? And then what happened? Once you become aware, you enter into this realm of other possibilities. And what did you just say you did? You realize that you can't stay in front of a computer for more than 20 minutes.
Mm-mm.
This is your time to walk away, do what you need to do to regenerate your spirit, and get back into what you need to do. And that's perfect. You have total control. You are very aware of what turns you on, what turns you off, what gets you annoyed, and what sparks your energy. It's all becoming aware of, and everybody's different. Everyone is different. Some people love to get up super early in the morning. That's their time. Some people, I start getting exhausted at 2 o'clock.
In the afternoon?
Yep, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Me too.
I get up at 4:30
in the morning. I'm
drained.
Yeah, me too. And I'm drained. So I have learned, you know, just through watching how I operate, my energy levels are in first thing in the morning and again later at night. Midday, I flag. So that's when I, you know, I may go out and I love to cook, so I may go out and put on a pot of gumbo. I may be vacuuming. I may be doing nothing much. I may be reading a Kindle. But I know that I'm not highly productive at those times.
And it's so cool. So, and what you have done, again, we're getting back to get your shift together. You have shifted your life to what propels you to do what you do.
Well, and I've created the environment for that.
Yep. But it's all done by shifting your focus and your way of living.
Yes.
You shifted it all.
Agree,
and that's all it is. It's a slight, gradual shift. People think, oh, I have to change. You don't. The shift creates the change, but it's not anything drastic. It's not anything drastic. It's just knowing who you are, what you are capable of doing, and what gets to you, what gets you anxious, what gets you annoyed, and just doing your own thing.
So, I love that. That is just brilliant. So why, and I think this is a silly question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because you've really done a beautiful job of explaining what the book is about. But why is it important for people to read it? I mean, are people genuinely not aware? I look around me and I think they're not, I'll be honest with you. I think that people get caught up in the hustle bustle of their daily life and, you know, the life that they think they've had to craft for themselves and their families. And I think they don't know how to break out of it, not realizing that it's all in their own heart, their own head.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. The reason why the book is important for people to read, because number one, first of all, I invite everyone out there just to go to Amazon and read the reviews. They will totally blow you away, and I'm not saying this to impress anyone, but to impress upon them that you're going to read basically the same thing. It's an easy read, number one. It's not brain
yeah,
surgery.
I started.
It's
I have a review
adjustment.
Going up today for you. I'm
oh, that's great.
One too.
The biggest compliment I get is that everybody says, oh, my God, he's talking to me, because it's
mm-hmm.
everyday person. Whether you're wealthy, whether you don't have any money at all, whether times are tough, whether you're half negative, half positive, most negative, doesn't matter. This book can help you on every single level. This book shows people, and I think this is one of the greatest aspects of the book, it shows them how to enjoy themselves during the process of whatever it is that they are trying to achieve. Now, when I say the process, I'm not just talking about the process of achieving your goals at work. I'm talking about the process of taking the dog for a walk, changing the baby's diapers, going food shopping, picking out what brand of peanut butter you're going to get. Your life is a process.
Mm-hmm.
And I show people that, you know, it doesn't have to be a drag. And that process starts as soon as you open up your eyes to greet the day.
Most people, as
soon as they open up their eyes, the first thing they focus on is the grueling day they had the day before, the idiots that they had to deal with, all the stuff that didn't get done, and then they're thinking about all the stuff that has to be done on the coming day, and they can't understand why, when they're starting out the day, their energy level is rock bottom when it has to be sky high. Have you ever tried to achieve a goal when your energy level is hitting the ground?
No, I don't even try. I literally walk away and say, okay, I'm coming back when I'm feeling better.
Yep.
And it may be 3 minutes down the road. It may be 4 hours.
God, you
but
and I have
I
so much in common.
I won't do it because I know I will do it poorly, and that will just reinforce the irritation that I'm already experiencing.
Yep.
So I just don't pile bricks on top of rocks.
Yeah. That's a good one. I like that. I never heard that. Pile of bricks. I kind of like that.
You can have it. It's yours.
It's a beautiful thing. Thank you. Write that down, somebody. Okay.
But, you know, I do the same thing. I mean, I go to bed at night. If I have a sticky problem that didn't resolve itself during the day, I literally turn it over to my subconscious for review.
Hmm.
My subconscious is my best friend, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
3:18 in the morning, I wake up, I've got the answer. I may have four answers. I just have to winnow through and pick out the right one.
Yeah.
Then the next morning, and I'm plotting world domination at the same time. So the next morning I wake up, and as my mother says, the devil says, oh, crap, she's awake. And I'm already ready for the day. So, I mean, I'm often ready. I love waking up. I'm, you know, one of those really annoying, cheerful people. I hit the floor, and I'm gone. And to me, when I get around people who, you know, they wake up, and they're like, oh, God, I need coffee, and they're shuffling around, I'd rather be hit with a stick than be around those people.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'd rather hit the people with a stick, but okay.
Well, I didn't want to say that. It was inferred.
Yeah, just smack them in the back of the head and say, lighten
yeah.
up. It's life.
Really, this is your life. Enjoy it.
Yeah,
I don't say it's giggles and grins all the time, but
yeah.
The most mundane thing should be fairly enjoyable for you to do because you can do it.
Yeah. So I agree with you, but as I said, it starts when you open up your eyes in the morning, and you know, don't focus on what has to be done, man. Focus really on who you have to be to get it done. That's the important thing.
I
show people in the book, you know, as soon as you open up your eyes, before you take the covers off and plant your feet on the floor, focus on something or someone that you're totally grateful for, and I don't care who it is. Maybe it's your wife or your husband or your boyfriend, girlfriend, your dog lying on the side of the bed, the bird singing out the window, a particular goal that you achieved. It doesn't matter. Just feel it with your heart and soul and build from there. And, you know, the reason why you do that, it's just that the most powerful connection you have to your higher self is gratitude. And you always want to start your day connected to that higher part of yourself. And it just makes sense. It's obvious why. Because when challenges hit you, when you're connected to that part of yourself, it doesn't seem overwhelming. You don't feel victimized. You just say, okay, here's another bump in the road. What do I have to do to turn this around? And,
right.
You know, it's just common sense, like I said, shifting. And I don't care who you are out there, because some people say, oh, you have a lot to be grateful for. I don't care who you are. I don't care what it is that you're going through. There is always something to be grateful for.
Absolutely.
And I use a perfect example in the book of Christopher Reeve when I met him and how grateful he was for his life, even in the condition that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
So
he had a terrific story. I would follow around and see how he was doing because he dealt with that with such grace.
Oh, yeah.
It was just tremendous. There was so much to learn.
And at the very beginning, though, he wanted his wife to end his life. He asked her, let's do this. I'm not good for anyone. But then when she brought the two kids into the room and they stared at him and he knew right then and there that they needed him, that's when he realized he had something to be grateful for.
Right.
And he built his life on that gratitude. And, I know Christopher Reeve said he was going to walk, and that never happened. What he accomplished.
But he helped a lot of people.
Oh, my goodness. What he accomplished in the last 9 years of his life is more than what most people could ever do in a lifetime. And he did it in that condition. I mean, that's just, there's a quote, and I'm paraphrasing it, and I use it in my book, that he said, my life didn't turn out like I thought it would be, but there is joy, there is love, and there is laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And now anyone listening to that right now, after what he went through, if you can't tell me that you don't have anything to be grateful for, then,
right.
You're just not looking. So
you're certainly not aware. And I'll be honest with you, when I get around people like that who are terminal,
mm-hmm.
who seriously are terminal, that they're unhappy, they're aggravated, they're going to be this way no matter what, I get the heck away from them and I never get around them again. I just don't allow them to be around me.
Yeah, well, you're a very sensitive person. A lot of people don't know that they can make that choice to not get caught up in that negative energy, because energy is out there and it's very much alive.
Well, the worst part is they're energy vampires.
Yeah,
now, I don't want them around me.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, it just wears me out to even stand in a room with them.
Oh, yeah.
I've been reading the book for the last several days, and you're right, it's a very simple read, but here's my thinking. You read it once, because I read fast. I run through, I look at bullet points, I grab what I think I need. Then I let it digest for a couple of days, and then I go back and I really read it, because now I know what I'm looking for. And it took me several reads. I read it the first time very, very quickly. The second two times, I was like, ooh, let me go back and look at that. What I noticed is you use the phrase humor being a lot.
Yeah.
So tell our audience what a humor being is.
Your humor being is of your higher self. It's the part of you that brings out the best in you when times get really tough. What your humor being can give you more than anything else is emotional stability.
Mm-hmm.
I explain in the book that what the definition of a sense of humor is, and then I say your humor being is a part of you that acknowledges that you do have that part in you, and it urges you to use it, especially when times are tough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the tools that helped me to turn my life around big time was my sense of humor. And it's amazing. I have found, and I consider myself an expert on humor, I have found that humor literally nips negative thought patterns in the bud before they blossom into emotional havoc. And if people can just find the courage to laugh at life's challenges, and you're not laughing, and this is what people don't get, you're not laughing at something that's serious. What you're doing is you're laughing off the fear that represents it. And
that's why
we have
this distinction.
Yes, that's why we have this gift.
Yeah.
You know, it's like 9/11, when that happened,
2001,
9/11, when the reporter, I don't know if anyone remembers this, but because there were so many clips on it, but the reporter was right in the ground zero, and this was like 2 days after, and she's talking to this group of firemen who are all banged up and bruised, and this one guy has a bandage around his head, part of it is around his eye, and his arm is in a sling. And she looks at this guy, and there's dead silence, and she looks at this guy. She goes, how is it that you are so banged up like you are, and you're still going in there to help? How can you do that? Without missing a beat, the guy walks up to her microphone, puts his mouth right by the microphone, and goes, hey, lady. He goes, first of all, I'm from New York, and I'm a fireman. That's all you need to know. And everyone started laughing. Now,
mm-hmm.
here's the point. I know that laughter only lasted a couple of seconds, but sometimes only a couple of seconds is all you need for you to catch your second breath.
Right.
And laughter gives you that couple of seconds to move forward. It's an emotional, spiritual builder that some people just don't get. And unfortunately today, we are becoming so politically correct that we are stifling our laughter genes and our humor genes, you know, and that's becoming a really big problem.
Look, I see that. You know, I'm a political junkie, and I see a lot of what's going on some of these blogs where people are almost afraid to say what they really think because they know they're going to be attacked by some troll. And that troll could be your next-door neighbor, but mother of God, it's vicious.
Yeah.
I say what I like. If you don't like it, that's kind of your tough. I don't care.
It's gotten to the point where it's personal that you whether you are for President Obama or not, but the mm-hmm. fact that you disagree with him, you're called prejudice, is frightening.
A racist, I know. It's
absolutely frightening. It's absolutely, yeah. And actually the people that accuse you of doing it are really racist themselves.
No,
because
no
they're
kidding.
Putting you in a category of a specific type of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's discouraging, and that's a shame people can look at life like that.
Well, it is, and to go back to something that you said just a minute ago, you know, sometimes just that little brief burst of laughter,
yep.
when it comes out of nowhere and it's unexpected, can kind of change how you're thinking, but it also changes something in your brain. Have you ever had this happen, Steve, where you're having a thought and you're in the middle of something really negative? And I've had this happen. I can hear when I make that decision, whether I've taken a breath or I've just recognized that this thought is so negative, I will take a metamorphical, I can't even say the word, an imaginary breath, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
But I can hear a click. I literally hear a click in the left side of my brain that says, I'm done. I am done, and you are never coming back. And I promise you, that thought is never allowed space in my brain again.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's really
cool.
It
doesn't happen a whole lot, but when it does, I'm like, oh, okay, well, that was a wall builder. You're gone.
That's
you know?
Really cool.
Get
well,
out of here.
Yeah, beat it. Leave it now.
Mm-hmm,
the,
mm-hmm.
the thing with getting in tune with your humor being, the more you allow yourself to laugh off the fear in life's stressing situations, the more it becomes a part of who you are. And what I started doing is that I started saying, wow, look, it worked again. And when you say that, you send a message to your brain. So when you're in another stressful exactly. When
right.
when you're in another stressful situation, your brain goes, hey, remember the last time you used your sense of humor, try it again. And then after a while, it just becomes second nature to you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was Mark Twain that said, nothing can stand against the against the wrath of laughter, not even fear.
I know. I love Mark Twain.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, let me ask you this. I tend to use humor, too, to protect myself. I think we all do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, self-deprecating humor. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I will use humor to get me out of situations where I'm just uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I don't think that's all that unusual, is it?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, it's pretty healthy.
Oh, good.
Because humor breaks down those barriers. It breaks down mm-hmm. barriers. And when you're uncomfortable in a situation, humor just has a way of relieving the tension, and it could actually help you from getting angry.
Right.
Or
right.
feeling fear or panicking or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
God, people use humor. Have you ever been to a funeral service or a wake at someone who passed away that you love?
Right after. Everybody goes and eats and drinks and cracks totally up.
Even in the funeral home itself, you see a group of people standing and they start telling incredibly funny stories about the deceased.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not negating the seriousness of the subject matter. They just intuitively know that by laughing, you know, it's kind of a weird thing because when everyone's engaging in it, you kind of almost feel that the spirit of that person will never die, will always be with you. And that's what laughter does. It just makes you realize that life still goes on. You know, and that spirit that constitutes who that person really is, will always be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that we have people saying, well, you shouldn't be laughing. You're at a funeral home. You shouldn't be laughing. That's not funny.
Mm.
Oh, it is funny. You just can't see it.
I know. I don't understand. I've been around humorless people. Every now and then I'll get around somebody who literally is humorless. And a couple of things happen. Number one, I start poking at them to see if there really is no humor, because
right.
I just can't, you know, I just can't avoid it. I have to know.
Right.
And the second thing is just total pity, not sympathy, pity. I feel so sorry for people who have no sense of humor.
I agree, but I think everyone does, I just think that they don't know that they have it. I think everyone has a humor being. It's just that a lot of people, it's buried.
What a
shame.
Really,
oh, it is. And it could be a lot to do with the way they were raised, the way they were brought up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everyone has it. And like I said, unfortunately, some people just don't know it. I think everyone has a higher part of themselves, and people don't realize that either.
Oh, absolutely. I know these days, you know, with the job being, the market being what it is, and, you know, jobs on the wane, apparently, you know, people are, I think, tense at work. Isn't this a good time to have a great sense of humor with your work? Because, you know, you may, here's my thinking, and I may be dead wrong, but if I've got a company and I've got a bunch of people scurrying around scared like little rabbits, something's wrong somewhere, and it's probably coming from the top. But if I've got an employee or a group of employees, their work may not be stellar, but they are helpful. They have humor. They're willing to reach out and do whatever needs to be done. Those are the people who are not going to get laid off first.
I agree, and it starts with management. They have to instill more laughter in the workplace, and that's one of the things I talk about when I talk to corporate America, the importance, you know, and if you do get in tune with this humor being part of you, it ignites creativity, productivity. It makes people aware that they don't have to be afraid to make mistakes because they can bounce back. And it's great for teamwork. It's great for customer service. It's great for leadership skill. It's anything that you can possibly think of in the business world. A sense of humor is absolutely crucial, and because it just irons out the wrinkles of everyday business, whatever that may be for you. It just iron. That's what humor does. It has a way of ironing out the wrinkles, and people got to get in tune with that part of themselves. But today we are so caught up in getting things done. And hurrying, and that's one of the things that technology is doing. It's hurting people. It was there to help us to make our jobs easier, but now that we know that we have technology, we're asked to do more.
True, that is so true. And listen, you know, even around the house, I mean, you wouldn't think this, but I remember my grandmother, and you know how my mother's worked. You know how both of these women worked very, very hard in the house. Look, it is so darn easy now. All I have to do is throw a load in the washer, throw a load in the dishwasher. You know, I've got a little robot vacuum cleaner. So why do people scream that nothing can get done? I don't get it.
Yeah,
we have so many, you know, the technology is phenomenal to get. My day should be seamless. Of course, it's not. But I promise you, I take full advantage of all the technology that I have in my house.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think we're doing more than what we have to do, and I think that's the problem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that's the problem.
We don't seem to rest much, do we?
No, we don't. No. There's a article I just wrote. It's called My Time, and it's not in the book, but I talk about my time and what I do with my time and how precious my time is to me. And you alluded to it earlier with what you do with your time, walking away when you're feeling stressed out and go back to do the vacuum. I do the same thing. You know, I have three dogs in my house, and when I'm home, you know, I'll just feel, okay, right, there's hair on the floor, I'm going to go do the vacuum. And by doing that, it's almost like a Zen Buddhist thing with me. I go into a different zone. I'm actually meditating while I'm vacuuming, and I can't tell you how many incredible ideas come into my head before I go back to what it was that I was having a challenge with, and the idea is crystal clear. You know,
that's
right,
because you gave your brain a break.
Yes, and that's another thing people don't do. They don't give their brain a break. And one of the things I talk about in the book, which I think is so important, is enjoying yourself during the process of whatever you're trying to achieve. Don't wait for the goal to find happiness. It's the journey towards the goal that's the most important thing, because the journey towards the goal is where your life unfolds, is where you're making a statement to the entire universe that you are capable and able to do this. This is where all your challenges are met, all the good times and bad times are all put together, the stuff that your life is made of. And there are people who actually say, I'll be happy when. I'll be happy when I achieve the goal. I'll be happy when I get out of work. I'll be happy when the weekend gets here. I'll be happy when people respect me. And the whole time you're saying that, you don't realize you're creating a mindset that's signifying that happiness will always be a couple of steps ahead of you.
Right. You're always postponing it.
You're not living in the moment.
So I don't do that. You know, and you don't do that either, clearly. Yeah, every moment that I have could be my last one, period.
Yep.
We don't know. I live in the moment. Yes, I plan. Yes, I'm very analytical and very methodical. I'm always planning. But I'm also right there in that moment, listening, breathing, enjoying it.
Yep.
Yeah,
well,
that's
the only
way to live.
Most people can't live in the moment.
Oh,
especially,
no.
How could you live in the moment when you're on your cell phone 8 hours a day, texting, talking, texting, texting, tweeting?
Mm-hmm.
It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening.
Well, it is, and you know who Larry Winget is, right?
Yeah, I know him quite well.
Yeah, I figured you did. He was on my show one time, and we were talking about texting and kids. He was basically saying that we are raising a nation full of fat, unhealthy kids. I went, oh, come on, Larry.
Yeah.
Turns out, you know, I had a chance to put that to the test not too much longer. I went out down to the road to pick up my mail. And the bus stopped, you know, the bus came through my little neighborhood, and these three kids, and I thought, well, I'm going to see, because it was ringing in my head. And I wanted to see if he was right. So these kids got off the bus, and I don't know how old they were. They're big kids, so, you know, probably high school.
Mm-hmm.
And they got off the bus, all three of them, and they walked abreast down the road because we don't have sidewalks. They were unhealthy looking.
Mm-hmm.
They were pasty. Across the board, they were overweight. They did not speak to one another. They did not look up from their thumbs because their thumbs were very busy.
Oh, my God.
They walked right past me. I stayed there by my mailbox to see if they would acknowledge that I was around. I live in the Deep South. You know, we're supposed to have manners down here. I was perfectly invisible to those kids.
That's amazing. We have become desensitized.
It really bothered me.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Go to any restaurant. Go to any restaurant, and you know, my wife and I just last week we were at a really nice restaurant, and there was a couple and their two kids, and the whole time they sat there, the two kids were on their phones, texting, going back and forth, not even getting involved in the conversation. The family, the father or mother, did nothing to even sway them. You know, I hate to say this when I was a kid, but I'll tell you what, my father would have taken the phone and thrown it in the garbage and said, you're here with your family, we're going to have a discussion whether you like it or not.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and apparently Larry was right about that. So, and I've been hearing recently a lot about millennials and how truly unemployable they are. And I get that. I see a lot of them. I'm like, really? You are so rude.
Yep.
But it's a crying shame. And they're not happy. I promise you they're not happy.
No.
You look at these kids, their shoulders are slumped, they're sullen.
Yep.
They're uncommunicative. Yeah. They're not happy kids.
Yeah,
I'm generalizing. I get that, but still.
Yep. Yeah, I know. I totally agree. So that's what technology is doing to people. And
It is. And you know, you would expect when the kids jump off a bus that they're ready to run home and get on their bikes or you know, go do whatever. Look, I live in the country. We have three roads in, three roads out. It's a very small neighborhood. It's a very nice neighborhood. It's very small. I rarely see kids playing outside, and I rarely see kids on their bikes.
Why should they when they can go on their computer and play baseball?
That's exactly right. it worries me for our... It worries me for the state of mankind. Let's just leave it there.
Yeah, I know. That's why, you know, Michelle Obama is noticing it, and she's trying to do something about it without trying to infringe on people's rights. You know, it's a very, very touchy subject. You know, how far can you go without saying, hey, this is my life, I'll do what I want. So, I don't know.
True
it's a touch-and-go thing.
It is, and boy, we are getting way far afield because I have so fascinating to talk with. Okay, I need to ask you. You have a very unique perspective of what it means to be positive, and I'm putting positive in air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
What is positive to you? How do you manifest it? How do you recognize it? How do you sustain it?
Well, let me tell you what positive doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that you have to wake up bright-eyed and cheery-eyed, you know, or 100, you know, 365 days a year and, you know, 24/7. That's not what it's about. Being positive isn't about living in a Disney movie, and it's, you know, it's not always looking at the bright side of life. You know, being positive means it's okay to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
Being positive means it's okay to make mistakes. Being positive means it's okay to lose it sometimes. You're not going to lose your positivity license. It's just that positive people know that life is filled with stuff that's good, and they know that life is filled with stuff that's really not good at all, even really bad. But they choose to focus on the positive rather than the negative. They choose to look at the bright side of things rather than looking at what life is constantly throwing at them. Mm-hmm. And that's what a positive person really is. They just choose to look on the brighter side. They're very aware that life can be filled with challenges, but they don't look at the challenge as, why me? Why am I feeling, why is this happening to me? Like the world is, you know, conspiring against them. A positive person says, well, this happened. Okay, what are my choices? Yeah. I can wallow in this, so I can do something to turn this around so I can live the life that I want with what I have. That's
and see,
positive.
I'm always positive that whatever comes at me, I can go over it, go under it, go around it, or blow it up.
Exactly. And if life hits me really hard with something, which it can do, you know, again, Christopher Reeve was a very positive person,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's just a mindset, and that positivity, that positivity is all based on your thought process. What are you thinking? What are you thinking that's either throwing you into the negative zone, or what are you thinking that's propelling you to a brighter life? It's your thoughts.
Wait, I have to ask you, every now and then, you know, I'll have something that just hits me wrong. And I will, honestly, I will recognize that I am just about to wallow in it. So I will make a decision, executive decision, so to speak, to give myself 5 minutes or an hour or half a day, whatever I think it's going to take, and just get depressed and mean and nasty and, you know, make continent shift. And once I make that decision, about 10 minutes later, I'm laughing at myself because it's so ridiculous. But sometimes you just have to go, all right, I am just going to be really cranky today, so everybody better get out of my way. I'm going to grieve over every slight or every shun or everything that... Whatever happened to me in my life, I am just going to give it hell. And I can't even sustain it. 10 minutes later, I'm just laughing my butt off.
Yeah, I get that too. I get like that also. But my sullen moments last a lot longer than that sometimes. But I allow that to happen. And
I sometimes,
and you know, a few people are listening, you know, sometimes it's okay to get into that, I want to be by myself, don't talk to me right now, because I'm angry about a lot of things, and right now life isn't going my way. As a matter of fact, there are things happening that I don't think should be happening. Allow those moments to happen. Curse about it. Do this, whatever it is you have to do. I work out a lot. I go to the gym a lot, so that helps me a lot. But eventually it starts dissipating, and when it does, that's when you start taking advantage of the positive perspective of it. That's when you start looking at it. You can even start laughing from that point because you know you're not going to stay there forever.
Right, and you said something so important. It can't really last forever.
No.
I mean, you can't hang on to this mean, nasty, ugly mood forever. It's just not natural.
Yeah, but also...
So be aware of it, deal with it, and then move on when it's over.
Yeah, but also be aware if you're at work and you're dealing with customers and you're getting to that mood or something like that, you have to either walk away and allow yourself to bounce back really fast and say, I'll continue this mood later on, because there are people that are unable to do that.
Right.
You have to be able to shift your focus and also do what needs to be done, because you are also responsible for certain things in life.
Well, I'll tell you, this morning I had to get on the phone with Authorize.net, and I got a hold of a girl who was so, it was clear, she did not want to be at the other end of that phone, and I called her on it. You know, after I got the second sullen sentence out of her, I said, listen, I see that you're having a bad day. And she said, well, what do you mean? And I said, look, it is very apparent that you want to be anywhere but on the phone with me. Can I speak with somebody else? And she had to think about that. She said, well, you're not hearing me. You know, that's not what you're hearing. I'm sick. I said, well, I'm sorry that you're sick, but I'm cranky. So this probably may not end well. Do you want to shift your attitude and I'll shift mine? Or do I speak with somebody else?
That's really
she
cool.
shifted her attitude, and after that, she needed to be told that she was being really a bad service person.
Yeah.
And once she got that, and I continued to be pleasant, she was fine.
Yeah.
And even her tone of voice changed, but I wasn't going to take it.
See, someone like that is, it, when they get like that, they're waiting for something good to happen to get them
right.
in a good mood. And I say, no, you can do that yourself. There's
mm-hmm.
always a chance to be happy.
She did.
Yeah,
manage
and she
it,
did.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty cool. That's really cool.
Well, I was not in the mood. I'm almost never in the mood to take poor customer service. So power shift and focus. Are there any tools or tips that you can kind of share to make that power shift? I mean, we all have to focus. And I think a lot of what happens is we lose focus. We start to bleed energy. How do you work with that?
Well, I came up with power shift and focus because it's something I learned about truly successful, happy people. And positive people, truly successful, happy, positive people, know that they're going to have good times in their life and bad times. It's just that they have ways of shifting their perspective. That is, that they allow themselves to temporarily step away from those moments that are bringing them down, and they immediately start focusing on things that bring them joy, that give them a brighter perspective on life. They always bless the things that life has given them rather than cursing what life hasn't given them. And they always make a choice to find the laughter in between and even during the tough times.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, a good example is my friend Kelly. years ago, her mom was in the hospital with cancer, and it was really progressing. And every time Kelly would drive to the hospital, she would notice that she'd be a nervous wreck, and it was affecting her family, excuse me, with her two young children, and it was affecting her business, her doing work, and she knew she had to do something, otherwise her life was going to fall apart, but yet she couldn't get this dreadful feeling from her mother and just feeling, you know, her mother's pain.
Mm.
So, which is understandable, you know. So one day on her way to work, Kelly noticed when she was getting out of the car that she was in a good mood. And she couldn't understand why the tears weren't in her eyes or why she was upset. And she took that mood into the hospital room with her mom and had a really good visit with her.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden something clicked, and she realized that the reason why she wasn't in that mood is because she was thoroughly thinking about her two young children and her husband and what joy that they gave her. And she was onto something. Kelly realized that simultaneously she can still feel pain but yet feel joy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So what she did, every time she knew she had to go to the hospital to see her mom, she would bring a photo album of her children. And
mm-hmm.
she would look at the photo albums, and she would reinforce that feeling that life still goes on. And when she went to see her mom, and when she came back, she would sit in her car, and she felt the urge to cry, and she'd allow herself to do it, and maybe it would last a while, but when it was over, she would say, okay, that's it for that. And then she would immediately shift her focus to all the things that bring her joy. And what she was doing was reinforcing that life still goes on. And even though there was so much pain around you, you don't have to focus on just the pain. You can shift your focus every now and then to the things that bring you joy. She even went to the point that even on the way to the hospital, she noticed how wonderful the scenery was, the majestic lawns and the trees and the beautiful homes, and that gave her a newfound appreciation that life had so much to offer, even though life is throwing so much pain her way. And
right.
it helped her to deal with her mom, and her visits with her mom were more reassuring and more positive, and it just gave her that inner strength to deal with the whole thing. Everyone can do that.
Yeah, I agree. It's becoming aware.
It's becoming aware.
Right.
Exactly. And I understand it's so easy to wallow in just the pain, you know, because then it's like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And how could this happen? But every now and then, man, if you just step back and just let those moments of joy just seep in, you realize that you can do both.
Absolutely. You know what? We're out of time. Can you believe how fast? Yes. We have 30 seconds left, and I haven't even asked you where people can find you on the web. And before you do that, will you please come back again?
I will absolutely do that. Absolutely. Oh, I'd love to.
Good.
Thank you so much.
You know,
for
I do
me.
This on the radio, so you can't say no. There's a method to my madness.
That's pretty cool. I like it. I like your madness. People can get the book on my website. It's very easy. Steve Rizzo. RIZZO, steverizzo.com. The link to purchase the book is on every single page of my website. You can either order it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. steverizzo.com.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, do you have any final thoughts before we conclude this show?
I just want everyone to know my promise to them, if they purchase this book, that this book, regardless of what your overall degree of happiness is in your life right now, if you read this book, you can be happier than you ever mm-hmm. thought you could be if you just follow the attitude adjustment strategies in this book. That's my promise to you.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you, everybody, for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. Steve, thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed your company.
Thank you so much for having me, and I wish you the very best.
Thank you. The show will be available soon. You can download it here or in an iTunes, and I wish you a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at your office on theweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.